This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
'Tis the season to shine with H&M. Discover the holiday collection and find fashionable pieces for your wardrobe or for under the tree. Get inspired and dazzle with this year's glam. From tuxedo styles, bow detailed pieces, impressive prints, and more. From unforgettable looks to unforgettable gifts. With fashion finds to home decor, find it all at H&M. Treat your loved ones and yourself this season. Shop in-store or at hm.com.
I have a surprise guest today. Well, it was a surprise to me. I had someone else booked today and they got sick. And Ruth, my dog sitter, was there when I got the cancellation. I said, how about we podcast today? So she jumped right in and I was so grateful. And we ended up having a really great conversation. So Ruth dog sits for me and she has a really unique lifestyle. And I just wanted to have a conversation with her about it. I've been wanting to actually podcast with her about her lifestyle for a while. So it was just serendipitous. She was here. My guest canceled and it just ended up being a great conversation. So I hope you enjoy today's episode with Ruth. Two things. One is we are changing our book club book. We are going to still read that book club book in January. But the new book club book is called Orange is the New Black. I'm sure you've heard of or have watched the TV show. But I wanted to read the book. There's no theme for this book. There's no like genre. We just wanted to read something that was kind of interesting and well-written. And that's what we're reading. So next book club book is Orange is the New Black. I don't remember the name of the one we were supposed to read, but we're going to postpone that one to January. It was a book that required some reflection and some writing and some homework, and we're just overwhelmed and we don't have the bandwidth for it. So we're pivoting. Orange is the New Black. Join us for that book club. We'll probably have that episode in a couple weeks. The second thing is, if you're looking for me online, you can go to birdieboyproductions.com, birdieboyproductions.com to find the podcast, the merch, and anything else you may be looking for, wife of the party related. You can send me an email at that website as well. Thank you for all your emails and your support. Thank you for sharing. Thank you all the people who come up to me in public and say, thank you so much for your podcast. It's really very sweet. And I really appreciate it. So thank you. I hope you enjoy this episode with my dog sitter, Ruth.
I rode my bicycle past your window last night.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Yeah. Thank you for doing my podcast today.
Sure.
It's nice to see you.
Good to see you,
and
too.
And I love your blouse.
I know. We just keep switching. Like, I saw you that one day.
I know. Well, it's because you're helping me, and I can't slow down enough to be here. That's the whole point, is you're here because I'm not here.
Right.
Most of the time. But
one or the other.
I didn't ask you this ahead of time. We can stop and start over. Can we talk about how your lifestyle?
Sure.
I think it's so fascinating.
Yeah.
I think it's really brave.
Well, thanks.
So tell everybody how you live. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I live on the edge.
You do kind of live on the edge.
I do. I'm the financial edge on the home. I'm officially homeless, but I'm well taken care of. I live in very nice places for a homeless person.
I don't think of you as homeless. I think of you as more like nomadic.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because you always have a home. Like you're not sleeping outside. To go.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't actually have a permanent address.
Well, here's the positive spin. It sounds very negative when you say I'm homeless. Here's the positive spin. You don't pay rent.
Right.
And you live in other people's homes while they're out of town or traveling. And you take care of their pets or their homes or sometimes for me, my kid. And so you don't really need an apartment.
Correct.
To me, that's what I see.
Yeah. Because I mean, it started because I was away from, I did have an apartment and then I was away so much. It seemed pretty stupid to keep paying for a place I was never at.
Yeah.
And then the woman that owned the house that I had the upstairs apartment in, she retired and moved to Maine. So I just sort of never looked.
Isn't that, you just never looked?
Never looked.
So did you just buy a storage unit or rent a storage unit?
Yeah, I have a storage unit.
Yeah.
I have my trunk.
You have a trunk and your trunk.
My trunk
and
my car. Yeah.
I was like, you have a trunk? Like a steamer trunk?
No, I have a cedar chest.
That's good.
That was like the one piece of furniture I kept because it was my parents'.
Oh.
So that's it. And a bunch of boxes.
Yeah. What's in the boxes?
Oh, like stuff you'd have around your home, like memorabilia,
okay,
papers, yeah, stuff like that.
Like not nothing. Like a coffee maker?
No. I mean, I don't know. I haven't been like through everything in so long that God only knows what's really in there.
The reason I think this is really cool is, I don't know if you know this about me. I've talked about it before on the podcast, but I grew up in a community that bartered.
Oh, wow.
Bartered for a lot. Like if I put gas in my car, I wrote a ticket, and then the guy who ran the gas station went to my dad, and my dad would fix his car.
Oh, wow.
So then I never really paid for gas. The same with the pharmacist, the dentist, the doctor. Not really the small grocery store I could do that with, but not the regular, like the Piggly Wiggly, not that one.
Right.
But anything that was kind of locally owned, no cash. I mean, cash would almost never change hands the way I grew up. So to me, I think that's not super odd to me that you are basically bartering for a place to live, right? Yeah. It's a win-win situation.
Right. And that's how I like to see it. Because when I do find crash pads for the few days, like in between jobs and stuff, I always like to trade it for something. I don't want to just like show up on, you know, keep showing up on somebody's couch.
Right.
So I like to have it where I can trade,
right,
you know, that it is a win-win.
Yeah, it's a total win-win. I think it's kind of awesome. Like if I were single, I could totally see doing that because I mean, I'm so Pollyanna sometimes, or so like a glass half full sometimes. This is part of why I want to talk to you about it, is I just feel like how much freedom you must have to not have to pay rent.
Yeah.
Is that how you feel?
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it only sucks. Like there's been a few times where I'm sort of like in between a job, like I've finished one place and I'm waiting for somebody else to leave.
Yeah.
And then you're really like, oh my God, I have nowhere to go.
Right. Yeah, that would be unnerving a little
bit. So that's kind of weird. But I mean, I always have a place, you know, to go next. But it's just, there have been a few moments like that. But yeah, I mean, not paying rent is everything. Like, I couldn't live the way I do. And I certainly couldn't live in the nice places. Like, my lifestyle would not be what it is, you know, my home style or whatever. Like, I get to be in exceptionally nice places most of the time.
Right.
You know, that are way beyond my means. So.
Right. It's so cool. So what's stressful about it? What's the glass half empty?
Living on the financial edge, because it's not steady work. So even that, it's that, and then my own problem of you know, asking for enough money from people.
Right, you do have that problem.
I have that issue. Yes,
you do.
So that, but it's just kind of living on the financial edge, I think. But it's getting better. I have a little bit in the bank now.
That's good.
Yeah. So, but yeah, not paying rent. I mean, I couldn't do this and pay rent.
Right.
It's not, I mean, I don't make enough to do that.
No. Yeah. I completely. Yeah. There's in LA.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. Like if I ever do decide I want to settle down again, they're sort of like, what would I do? Where would I go?
Because right.
I don't have a lot, you know, backing me up to start over. And because I don't have any furniture anymore.
You'd be really starting over. Yeah, that is an interesting perspective. You're kind of, not stuck, but stuck a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to have something kind of major get you to another level.
And that's why, it's been going on for years now, but like, I'm hoping that that's what the documentary is, you know, that's my stepping stone to my next thing, that I can start traveling and talking and living in hotels instead of people's houses.
Yeah, right? Instead of people's houses. I don't know. It's not so glamorous to live in a hotel long term. It gets kind of like,
I know,
room service again. Oh my God. I mean, as much as I love room service, after getting it for a couple of days in a row, you're like, okay,
yeah,
I could do something different here.
I just love traveling. I miss traveling.
You do?
So that's the other thing. Like all summer, like everybody I was sitting for was off to Europe and on all these great vacations. I'm like, okay,
I'm going
to Phoenix in October.
Phoenix is fun.
No, it was totally fun. We saw, are we on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've been on.
Oh, sorry. We saw this band. I was with my cousin and the band Bread, you know, from the 70s. There's a tribute band called Toast. And it was fantastic. I mean, it was just silly and fun. And I love their music. So there was no way the show would suck, you know. And
it was
funny. So I have a t-shirt now that says Toast, the ultimate Bread experience.
That's awesome. That's so cute. Where would you like to travel?
Everywhere and anywhere. I mean, I've been to Europe a few times and stuff, but I still want to go like South Pacific and Scandinavia. I'd love to go too. So yeah, just keep moving.
Yeah. Traveling is so fun. It's so expensive.
Yeah.
It's crazy nowadays how much it costs to do anything, feels like.
Yeah. Even driving to Phoenix with the gas prices.
You could. Yeah. But that's pricey. There's so much to do in the U.S. too. It's hard sometimes, you know, to think when Bert's like, let's go to, you know, New Zealand. I go, but I haven't been to Wyoming.
Right.
You know, I haven't seen Yellowstone. I haven't seen Mount Rushmore. I have been to the Grand Canyon a couple times, but I haven't seen the Ozarks. I haven't been really up in the Pacific Northwest much to speak of. I haven't been to Alaska. There's a lot to see here that you could, if you really wanted to, you could drive to.
Yeah, totally.
Take a little effort, but you could get there.
You get a camper.
Could get a camper.
And just go out. We did totally. That. We used to have a trailer that we traveled with in the summer, a station wagon and a trailer. And when we moved to Texas, we, you know, it's hard to get out of Texas, but we went and we did like all the national parks and stuff. So that was really fun because it's just an easy, cool way to do it, you know.
You did all the national parks?
Not like all the big of them, ones? All of them, but we did like Bryce, Zion, like...
great national park.
Painted Desert.
I love that national park.
Yeah, stuff like that.
They're great. So like, it doesn't even look like it's on this planet, does it?
No.
I remember driving through there going, what is this place? This is like some other world.
It is.
And it's so beautiful.
I feel places like that, I always feel like it's a Hollywood set, you know? It looks so nice. It's got to be fake, you know?
It's got to be fake.
But there is a lot of land left in this country. You think there's not. And then you go to places like that and it's just awesome.
It's true. We went to, somewhere recently and I was like, look at all this just like open land. There's nothing here. We just live in such a congested environment. It's hard to remember.
Yes.
It's a big place. how did you get into dog sitting?
I got into dog sitting. I used to travel a lot for work. I worked in television and I traveled a lot and I had a dog. And so when I traveled, a lot of my friends would watch my dog. And then he unfortunately died. Aww. And I had stopped traveling so much for work. I was doing more post-production. And people just started asking me like, well, since you don't have your dog, could you watch my dog? And it kind of grew from there. I've been so lucky. It's been word of mouth. I've never really had to advertise. I was on Rover.com for like a minute. I had one client from Rover.com, but you don't make a lot of money. It's like, because they live downtown and I had to pay for parking. So by the time I got paid, it was like $10.
Oh, shit.
So yeah, so that wasn't, but luckily, I mean, it's just been great people that, you know, a lot of the same neighborhood, people that know each other just keep referring me and I still get new clients. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not totally looking for them because my regular clients kind of keep me booked. But, I rarely say no if I don't have to.
Yeah, right. I know people ask me for your number and I go, Do I want you to have it? Because then she may be booked when I want her. Exactly. So I have to really go, who is this person and what do they mean to me? Exactly. If you mean enough to me, I'll give you the number. If you don't, you can forget it. I'm not doing it because I'm greedy.
But I try. There's a couple of clients like you that I check with first. I'm going to book. Because, I mean, you've been great to me and I love your dogs. And
they love you. Good Lord. You come in the house and you would think Jesus himself had showed up. It's like, what? Ruth is here. I'm chopped liver.
Well, we have fun. But it's so easy for me. Because it's like they're the only thing I have to focus on when I'm in your house.
Yes.
So it's like they do get all the attention.
Yes.
That's my job.
Yes.
So it's not like I'm trying to do all this other stuff and sort of pay attention to them. It's just they're why I'm there.
What I think is really interesting about your job is I think there are jobs like your job or similar that people don't think about having, even I still don't think of you as homeless. I think of you as an actively working dog sitter who doesn't have time to have a home. You've made a smart decision, in my opinion, is very smart. But I wonder if people in communities where they are struggling would think about that as a way of getting themselves somewhere to live. It takes a little bit of a hustle, right? You have to keep up with people and be responsible, obviously, and do what you say and show up on time. And those responsibility pieces I know is not for everybody, even in the 9-to-5 workplace, but I don't know. I just love that. I love the idea of making your way in the world work for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, that's definitely been, cause I love it. I mean, I've always loved dogs and I love it. And it gives me time, excuse me, to do my stuff, you know, to work on my film, and I'm writing a book now.
You are?
Yeah, a memoir.
A memoir? That's exciting.
It is. So that's kind of why I started too, because I figured, you know, in television, you can't really have another job because it's often very life consuming.
Yes.
And so that was part of the reason I started this too, is because I wanted time. But it was a slow start. I mean, there was the first year I was crashing on people's couches and sort of making a pest of myself a few times, but slowly it got better and better and better.
Busier and busier, right?
And now, like, I think in November, there's maybe 4 days I'm not booked.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it's just, it's been kind of magical too, because people slide in, like I had 2 weeks in November open. And then somebody called a new client and asked for like those exact dates.
Wow.
That I was like, yeah, sure.
I happen to be available.
So it's just, I don't know who's watching out for me, but it's some good force.
Your mother is watching out for you. I think she's probably part of the big team up there.
Maybe.
I think so.
That would be nice.
Oh, I have no doubt that she is watching out for you. Absolutely.
Thank you.
I forgot what I was going to ask you now. What is the hardest part about living like this? I think I already asked you that, but
moving my stuff around. It's just like I get sick of packing and, you know, wear stuff. I end up wearing like 3 outfits because I just, you know, stuff ends up at the bottom of a bag or a suitcase. And like I try every couple of weeks, I try and totally reorganize my suitcase and stuff, but I'm still carrying around like 4 of the, you know, reusable bags with crap in it and
extra stuff. Yeah.
So yeah, even though like I'm totally on the move, I can't pare down enough to just have 1 suitcase.
Right.
So it's just, that gets to be kind of a pain. And then just knowing I have stuff in storage that I might want to get to, like I like to paint, it's kind of a hobby, but it's like all my painting stuff is in storage, mm-hmm. and to get it out, you know, it's a big production. And then I have to be at somebody's house where there's room for me to spread out and like put my drop cloth down and, mm-hmm. you know, so I don't mess anybody's house up and things like that. And it just never seems worth it, because usually I'm, you know, if I was somewhere for like 2 or 3 weeks, maybe. But, you know, if I'm just somewhere for 4 days, it's kind of ridiculous to go get all my stuff and start something and then have to go put it back in storage.
Right. That is a pain.
Yeah.
That is a pain. Does it bother you that you don't have a refrigerator that's just yours?
No, because honestly, even when I did have a refrigerator.
I'm just worried about that. I'm worried that you don't have a fridge.
There is nothing in it. All I drink, all I need is my Diet Coke. And I just buy that as I need it.
As you need it.
So, yeah.
Such an easy way to live. I'm kind of jealous. I feel like my life is so busy and crazy all the time and stacked on every angle. That seems really lovely to just be that simple. And I mean simple in the best way.
Yeah.
It's just very kind of clean and streamlined. And what do you need? This, then you have that, and that's what you need.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, if I like to cook or anything, it would be more of an issue, but I don't. So, you know, I eat when I need to and whatever. But it's nice because you've got places to go and people to be around and stuff. I mean, it does get a little lonely sometimes and boring sometimes because, like, how many things are there to watch on Netflix after you've watched Netflix for hours on it?
Yeah, right. But if you're writing a book, then you've got plenty to do.
Yeah, I do. But you like, I can't focus on it all the time.
Oh, no, yeah, of course.
So it's like, sometimes I just sit there like, I'm not sure what I should do with myself right now.
So have you ever dog sat a dog that you were scared of?
I haven't sat a dog I'm scared of. I've had dogs I'm scared to walk.
Oh, yeah.
There's a German Shepherd that I walk, really big, really tall one, whose mother basically told me if, because he goes after squirrels, like if he goes, drop the leash.
Yeah, really?
Because he will pull you down.
Wow.
And then I had an incident where it's not a pit bull, like pit bulls are bad story. It was just this one of those really big, low, strong pit bulls, and I tripped over it.
Oh.
It like got under my feet somehow, and I tripped over it and fell flat on my face.
Oh no!
And stuff, but I was scared to walk those dogs anyway because I'm like, I'm not that strong, and I'm like, if I saw me walking a pit bull like that, I'd be like, that girl should not be walking that dog.
Then how do you walk my dogs?
Because your dogs don't do that. They're not like aggressive. I'm not scared of that. They're going to get aggressive and
they're
pull and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Mac a couple of times is when there's been other dogs has been like jumpy and pully. But I know he's controllable.
Yeah, he
is. He's not going to run, pull me across the street or anything.
No, he does listen pretty good. He's not perfect. But I know when I walk him, if I get stern enough in my voice, he's like, okay, I can't do that.
I think I trust your dogs. I've known Mac since he's a puppy, too.
I mean, you were here when he first got here,
first day.
Mr. Mac. He's so sweet. I walked him a couple weeks ago, I walked him once and there was a dog waiting behind this fence, just waiting for us. Had no idea this dog was anywhere in the world. And the dog literally snout through the cracks in the fence. Jai, 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 jai. And it scared Mac to death. And
really?
He bolted for just a minute because it just scared the shit out of him. And he almost pulled me down too. But that leash we have with the thing in the front of his chest is unbelievably good.
Yeah, it's helpful.
It's really helpful. I couldn't walk him with like a choke collar. He'd drag me all over town. There's no way.
Yeah.
Right?
No, that's the only time he ever almost pulled me down was actually off your front stairs because of the Halloween decoration.
He's so scared of the Halloween decoration.
He just jumped.
He's so scared. He's such a... Maybe I shouldn't put this out in the world. He's a really scary attack dog. No, he is really scared of his own shadow, right? He's a big scaredy cat.
Oh, God. But when I was staying here, I think it was 2 weekends ago or whatever, I had just taken him out back on the leash, whatever. And like the second we went outside, somebody set off fireworks or something. And it was pop, 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 pop. And he bolted inside so fast. And then he wouldn't go out back again. And when I took him outside, it was the whole like tail down.
Yeah.
You know,
he does not like fireworks.
No.
4th of July, he was a disaster.
Oh, poor thing.
I felt terrible because you can't talk to them. You can't go, hey, buddy, it's okay. It's not a gun.
Right.
He's just like, what's happening?
It's just loud noise that
I don't
see
like
anything.
It. Yeah, don't like it. So you sit cats too.
I sit cats too.
Uh-huh.
I've come to appreciate cats. I wasn't always a cat person. I've come to appreciate them.
I am totally a cat person. I've come to appreciate dogs. I love my dogs, but I would just have cats. I'd have a house full of cats. Yeah, they're so easy. And to me, I get the same love from a cat that I do from a dog. If you have the right cat, you know, some cats are just assholes.
Right.
If you get the right temperament cat, I mean, Gus is kind of like a dog.
Yeah.
He just kind of is like, hey, what's up? Can I sit in your lap? Cool. Feed me and I'm cool.
Yeah.
He's just like, cool. Like a dog. What is the weirdest animal you've ever sat?
oh, what was it? It was not like a grasshopper, a little lizard thing.
Oh my God.
I mean, and there was, well, there's this couple that has, they had that, they had a rabbit and a chicken. I guess the chickens might be the weirdest, but yeah, so I didn't really have to do anything with that.
Yeah.
But the only thing I won't do is snakes.
No snakes?
No. Reptiles, no.
Not going to drop a rat in a cage and watch him eat it alive? Oh, so disturbing.
No. And I'm not, that's part of the reason I'm not a total cat person. It's like, I'll be your friend and I'll love you until you bring me a dead animal.
Yeah.
And then I will not be a fan.
Yeah.
For that moment.
You just have to reframe it because really what they're doing is they're loving you.
I know it's a gift, but
they're bringing you a present. They're saying, I love you. They're also saying, I don't believe that you're competent enough to hunt. So I'm going to hunt for you and feed you. So if you reframe it a little bit, it makes it a little bit better, but not entirely.
I'm like, I don't need gifts. I'll love you without the gifts.
I know. They're so funny. This week, my podcast sponsor is Factor. I love this company. So Factor does quick and easy meals that you just heat and eat. And they are so good. I mean, I've had them for lunch. I've had them from dinner. They have vegan. They have vegetarian. They have protein plus meals. They have keto. They have calorie smart meals. They are dietitian approved recipes. You can have 4 meals or you can have 18 meals a week. I love their veggie chili. I also had this shrimp and rice dish. Sorry, I don't remember the exact name of it, but it was delicious. Their smoothies are so yummy. And I take a big sip out of their smoothie and add a little protein powder. And now I have a protein smoothie. I love this company. They make it super easy to change up your menus. If you want something different every week, you can do that. You can customize it and make it whatever you want. They're so easy and they're really tasty. So head to go.factor75.com/wife60 and use the code wife60 to get 60% off your first box. That's code wife60 at go.factor75.com/wife60 to get 60% off your first box. You can also click the link in the description below to get the website and the promo code. Thank you, Factor, for sponsoring Wife of the Party. So how's your documentary?
It's going well. It's going well. It's just nailing it down. And then I'm waiting for my director, has been working on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame special.
Amazing.
So I'm getting him back next month when that goes to air. And so then hopefully we'll just finish it.
Oh, you're that close?
Yeah. I mean, it's mostly about the visuals now and getting the rest of the stuff shot, like all the pictures and stuff and shot and in there. And
you are down the home stretch.
Visual. I hope so.
How long have you been working on this project?
It's been about 6 years.
It's a long time.
I mean, from first conception to, you know, and then it was about a year till I first started shooting. Mm-hmm. And then I did one round of interviews and then it was another year and I did the second round of interviews. And then from then, it's just been playing with it and trying to get my partners to pay attention to me. And
yeah. Yeah.
Because it's hard. I mean, I really thought, oh, I can just do this by myself, you know, because of my background in TV. I'm like, oh, I'll just put it all together myself. But it's when it's your own story and it's, you know, everything's on you. Mm-hmm. It's been harder than I thought just to nail it down. But it's going well. It's going well. And then writing the book has actually helped, too, because all the stuff I think should go in the documentary won't fit, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like having a place to put it sort of makes me not be so weird about, let me try and squeeze that in or let me move that around or whatever.
You can
let me focus more. Yeah.
Let it go where that documentary is concerned because it has a place.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is dedication and perseverance to continue on with this project. You've raised money for it. You've put your own blood, sweat, and tears into it. It's been a big, long haul.
It has.
Yeah. How do you feel?
I feel good. I feel frustrated because I just want it to be done now. Especially because I've been talking about it for so long. It sort of gets embarrassing. But
why? Don't ever be embarrassed about that.
Just because it's taken
it
so long.
That's
I know, but
okay.
I remember when I started, somebody's like, how long do you think it'll take? I'm like, oh, probably a year. Because I was so used to working, you know, where somebody gives you the money and gives you the resources or whatever. But I didn't realize how hard it was on the flip side just to, you know, have the idea, have the people. But now I need the resources. So.
Right.
That's been the hardest part for me and my issues with money.
Yeah. That is hard. That's hard, I think, for everybody.
Yeah. And that, they do say most documentaries take like 7 to 10 years.
So. That's what I was thinking. It's so funny. We were saying, I was like, 6 years seems like about right.
Yeah.
Seems about right. Because
just wait it out and then it'll just be done.
And you'll be done. Before you know it, boom. And you're like, that was fast 6 years. Maybe. I don't know. What are you going to do with it?
Well, I want to, you know, try and get it in the festivals and streaming somewhere. But then I also really want to make a shorter version of it to use for like educational purposes and to take out on the road and hopefully do speaking and just talking about the subject and using it kind of as my platform to be a valid person in that world.
Right.
Have something to talk about.
Yes. And that world is a world of suicide.
Yes.
Right.
Suicide loss.
Yeah. So it's for the survivors.
Survivors, people that have had people die by suicide,
mm-hmm.
which there are many.
There are many. And it's a heavy, heavy, it's a heavy load for your life when you have someone as close as you were as your mom.
Yeah.
I would imagine that would be a lot to carry for your whole life. So doing something that helps other people has got to lighten the load.
Yeah, definitely. And my mom was a social worker too. And I always, going into television, I felt guilty that I never was in a helping profession.
Mm.
And so it was sort of, this is sort of like the joining, you know, my social service gene with, you know, what I naturally like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of makes it special in that way for me, you know.
It's a perfect fit.
I didn't waste all that time in TV.
No, time was never wasted.
No, I mean, you know what I mean? It's just because always thinking I should be something else, but.
Isn't that hard that we do that to ourselves? We think we should be something else or something more than what we are, which is why I, again, find the way you live very admirable.
Yeah.
Because most of us go, no, that's not enough. But why? Why isn't it enough? You're safe, you're warm, you're in a lovely home. Why is that not enough for most people?
Right.
Myself included, by the way.
Right. And I'm directly helping other people. That's how I look at it. It's like, that's what drives me is sort of wanting to be a helper. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I do things so other people can go do their things that they need to do. So.
And that's so lovely and admirable and healthy in a lot of ways. It's kind of very balanced compared to the rat race we most of us live in, where you work a job that you hate and you don't feel like you're maybe helping anybody or feel like you're trying to help people who don't want the help. There's so many jobs that are that, you know, where people don't want the help.
Yeah.
But
I was starting to get depressed too in television. Like the last couple of jobs I had weren't, you know, I really took more for the money than the love of the game.
Yeah.
And so that was, I was really starting on the road back to depression. And then I started volunteering. And that's kind of when the dog sitting really started because I needed to make some money too.
Yeah.
But I was able to do both of those. And then that kind of led to the documentary and all that. And I just kept going.
So many jobs could be supported by what you're doing.
Right.
Right. I mean, when I was a writer, I manage apartment buildings because guess what? I'm home all day long. Unless there's a crisis or like, you know, rent day. That was always a heavy day. And I always had a couple of days during the year where I knew for sure I was absolutely not able to write. But other than that, I could write all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And I waited tables at night and, you know, I sold Avon. I did all these things to make the life work for me.
Right.
Is what I wanted was to write.
Right.
So then these other things seem very easy. I think when you maybe don't have a vision of what you want or what the purpose of that job is for you, you become very unhappy.
Yeah.
So people who are waiting tables and that's not, they don't feel that's their purpose. I think I really loved waiting tables. I thought it was awesome because you make really good fast money. You're always hustling and moving. You're always trying to sell somebody something a little better, but not to be inappropriate. And then you get to make someone happy and have someone have a wonderful evening. That mm-hmm. was, I thought, where's the bad in this?
Right.
I'm tired, but hey, I'd be tired digging ditches too. So why not do this? But I always had another purpose.
Right.
And the people in the restaurant with me, the last restaurant I worked with was a really big restaurant. So many of them were so miserable. And I thought, why are you working this job?
Right.
Like, you don't have to do this for a living. It's not like someone said you will wait tables and that is your only option.
Right.
What does that job afford you? Well, because there's a reason why you stay in a job that you hate.
Right.
And then can't you change your perspective on that job that you hate and look at what it affords you?
Right.
I mean, obviously, I currently am one to talk at this moment in life. But I've had many jobs before Bert was so successful that one might say sucked. You know, I worked mm-hmm. at a freaking video store. I sold wedding gowns. Talk about drama.
Wow.
Try selling wedding gowns. It's a nightmare. Like, you practically get stabbed by people if you bring the wrong gown or say the wrong thing. It was not a fun job.
Wow.
I worked in a bank, also not fun.
Wow.
You know, sold Avon, I waited tables. I was a personal assistant for a really wealthy guy. That was not fun either. I worked in a finance office as like the person who just made sure there was office supplies everywhere. I drove a tow truck for my dad.
Wow.
What else have I done? I mean, all those jobs are kind of, you know, some of them are kind of purpose-free.
Yeah.
Unless they give you what you need to do something else, like dog sitting gives you freedom, some balance. You in some ways sort of run your own schedule. Like mm-hmm. if you were hardcore into yoga, you could still do yoga right. and dog sit all day long. Yeah.
No, it's very freedom oriented.
Yeah.
Sure.
I wish as a society we would look at life a little more like that. My life gives me freedom. I do this podcast when my guest can, but really when I can first,
mm-hmm.
I have to work for me and then I figure out when. So, you know, not that I'm making a gazillion dollars, but it is something that I feel I have a purpose in.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I wish we thought more like that as a society. Isla got in the car the other day and she said, so way back she had said, she either wants to be a bartender or a zookeeper or a trophy wife. She's not sure. I was like, hashtag goals. I don't really care. I'm not really into the trophy wife piece because that part I think has a lot of baggage you don't understand. But I don't really care if she wants to be a bartender or a zookeeper, because the truth is rarely is your first job your last job.
Right. Oh, for sure.
You can go to college anytime you want. And a lot of shit doesn't need a college education. Maybe a certificate or a 2-year program, maybe if that, for some certain
things.
Yeah,
I didn't finish college.
You don't have to have a college degree to be a writer Mm-mm. or a director. I mean, obviously it's helpful, but if you have a natural creativity and a curiosity to learn, you can do anything you want.
Yeah.
So when she got in the car, I thought to myself, I wonder how many of her friends' parents would go, zookeeper, you can just mark that off your list right now. Which is kind of ridiculous, you know? So what I was like, well, why don't we see if there's like a summer intern program and you can intern at the zoo next summer between junior and senior year. And if you like it, then pursue it. I don't know what you need for credentials to be a zookeeper. I would imagine you have to have some kind of biology degree or something, animal care. Zoology.
Yeah.
But then that's something you can look into, you know? But why not? What's wrong with being a zookeeper?
The whole Irwin family, you know, Steve Irwin's family, they run a zoo.
Totally.
They're very successful, very happy people.
And why can't you just work at the zoo and be a very happy person?
You can.
Why can't you just do that? Why do you have to be?
It is the pressure, though, because I'm not sure, like, if I didn't have the other stuff going on, the documentary and the book, like, I'm not sure how happy with myself I'd be. Like,
of course.
You know?
No, that's my point.
Yeah.
Yeah. If your job makes you happy, like
right.
being a zookeeper makes you happy, great. But if being a zookeeper pays the bills so that you can
right.
do something else,
right.
great.
Yeah.
It's all about your purpose, right?
Yeah.
Your purpose is educating people and sharing your life story so that other people feel not alone, comforted, right. aided so you can make this journey easier for them in some capacity. Mm-hmm. That's a real purpose.
Yeah. It's the first one I've had too. I mean, I never felt like I enjoyed my life in television very much, but I didn't feel purposeful in it. I didn't feel like, you know, I was giving anything to the world. I mean, entertainment, yes. But I think because I come from a background where my dad's a doctor and my mom was a social worker and stuff, like I never felt it was enough.
Mm.
So now, like I said, kind of combining the two skills, this feel of social service or giving back, and then with what I like to do, which is the television stuff,
mm-hmm.
has really made a difference.
That's awesome, Ruth. Yeah. It's really awesome.
Yeah.
No. It's impressive that you were brave enough to pivot.
Well, I kind of didn't have a choice because it was well, I had a panic attack when my dog got diagnosed with cancer, which mm-hmm. sort of started me on this whole journey finding out like what was quote unquote wrong with me because I couldn't snap out of this depression. And then when I realized it had a lot to do with like unresolved grief and things like that is when I really started looking into the suicide stuff. And so it just, that too kind of just happened naturally. Like I started talking to people and then the idea came up to talk to my family about it. And I was like, once I thought of it, you know, I'm like, now I can't not do it. Mm-hmm. So,
but don't you think that's brave?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say no, but I mean, I don't think of myself as brave, but I think what I did was brave. Yes.
Yeah. It's very brave to go, I'm going to leave this whole industry behind in a sense and pivot and work over here,
yeah.
which even though they're related to television, suicide prevention and education and social services and support is not the first thing I think of when I think of television.
Yeah, no, definitely not. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
I was sort of like, I was telling Isla the other day, I did a documentary on spontaneous human combustion. Like it was fun, but I'm not sure who that helped.
Definitely didn't help Isla because probably Isla's going, am I going to spontaneously combust?
She was kind of saying, can it happen if you do this? Can it happen? I'm like, it doesn't happen.
It's not real.
Watch the documentary. You'll see it.
That's so funny. I can see Isla's brain going, what?
She's like, what if I swallow a bomb? Well, no, that's not spontaneous.
What if I swallow a ball? Like, then you're stupid.
You would combust, but it wouldn't be spontaneous.
Her brain is so funny. Yeah, I've been thinking really seriously about being a zookeeper. I'm like,
that's great though, because she does love animals.
She loves animals. I said you need to work on zookeeping your cat first because your litter box up there is a disaster and there's no food in her bowl and you haven't changed her bowl in days. I go up there and feed her, okay. But I tell her there was no food in her bowl again. I said, so your animal husbandry is less than impressive at the moment. So if you're going to be a zookeeper, you may want to step up your game, like just with your own cat.
Yeah.
And she was like, Mom. It's totally different when it's a job. I'm like, no, it's actually, no, you're 16. We're not going to worry about this.
It is your job. Start paying her for it. Say, I'll pay you a dollar if you take care of your own cat.
No, no, I will not do that. No, because she should just take care of her own cat.
She should. That's a very cute cat.
She's so sweet. That cat has been really, really helpful.
Okay.
I worry about what we're going to do with her when Isla goes to college. If Isla decides to go to college, I don't think a lot of colleges allow cats in the dorm.
Probably not.
So I don't know how I'm going to acclimate this cat.
You're going to transition her into the house.
I don't know. I said to Isla, maybe we'll see if Georgia wants to take her for a year because Georgia will be in an apartment and can have a cat. So
there you go.
She may move in with her auntie because Georgia loves her. And for people listening, Isla has a cat that lives in her room. She has a room that's like the size of a studio apartment in New York. It's a big room, but it's a cat that helps with her anxiety. And it's done wonders. I mean, it's done wonders for her sleep anxiety.
That's
She was like checking the doors and windows at night and she stopped doing that because she watches the cat. And I tried forever to get all three dogs and Gus to sleep, any of them in any combination to sleep in her room. And they never would, which freaked her out even more because she thought, see, something bad is in my room. And I kept going, no, they just want to be where I am. And even though they sleep in the living room and I sleep in the master bedroom, I think they want to be close, as close to me as they can get.
Yeah.
So
they're used to being with each other too, especially Mac and Izzy.
Yes, they are used to being with each other. I wish they could sleep with me, but I can't sleep with those big dogs.
Yeah.
I can't.
You'd need two of your beds.
Need two. Bert said, let's just get two king-size beds. And I'm like, no, I do not want to sleep with 200 and plus dogs. I don't, because they would be on me.
Right.
That's the problem. Izzy cannot sit unless she's on me.
Right.
And then Mac wants to be on me, and then I can't move. And I already have Gus is already on me. Mona, at least now, has gotten so old, she's like, I'll just be at the bottom of the bed. As long as you make sure I'm in bed with you, I'm good. Yeah. But I'll just be dead. She doesn't snuggle with me anymore. And I'll try to make her snuggle with me, and she's like, pass. I'm just going to go down.
Oh, she's never snuggled with me.
No.
No. She's always made her little space on the bed.
She used to sleep probably one or two nights a week, like in my arm, like spooning. And then as she's gotten older, she's gotten like, it must be uncomfortable or something. It's not comfortable or something, because she stopped doing it.
That's what sometimes with her, I'm like, do you want me to keep petting you? Do you want me to stop?
She's so old, that lady. I can't believe she's still getting it done in the capacity that she is.
She's amazing. She's like a little puppy, the way she bounds around the house. Like, yes. She's the fastest one of all of them.
Yes. She is a little springy, bouncy, 16-year-old, broke down, one eye, no ears, broke down dog, but she's still kind of... She's so happy.
She is a very happy dog.
She's a happy, happy dog. And so that's what I'm waiting for, you know, is when she's no longer happy. Because that's when you kind of know.
That we don't talk about these things.
I know, but you know.
I'm very attached to that dog.
I know you are. She is to you too. Very attached. Georgia went to college and was not emotional about it. She was super excited and then stopped and went, I just realized that Mona's definitely going to die while I'm in college, because she's 16.
Aww.
And Georgia has 4 years of college. I don't think Mona's going to make it to 20. That would be really unheard of. And when Georgia said that, she just fell totally apart. She's like, I'm not going to be here. I'm not going to. That's going to be terrible. I'm not going to get to say goodbye. And I said, well, just say goodbye every time you say goodbye, not from a grief place, but from a like, loving, I love you, right. Really sincere place. So if that does happen, you've had that moment with her where you feel like you really gave her some extra love.
Yeah.
So she did. And then she went, oh, the same is for Gus. Aww. He's going to be gone too. And I was like, well, some cats live to be 25. He's a little on
the fence. How old is he now?
He's 16.
16.
But I was like, you never know. The cat might make it through. But Mona, I don't know. She's still got that spring in her step, but 16's old.
Yeah, my childhood dog was a little terrier that lived till 18.
Yeah.
And we had to put him to sleep eventually. But so my dad, actually, I was living in New York at the time, and my dad flew me home so I could say goodbye.
Aww.
That was the first time I ever saw my dad cry, was when we put him to sleep. It's very sad.
It is very sad.
I don't like those moments.
I hate them.
I mean, you sort of wish they'd just die, you know.
Yes.
So it's natural and nice and neat, but then again, you want to be able to say goodbye. So it's a rough one.
It's hard. My childhood cat Fatty, I got Fatty when I was 5, and he was 18 when he passed away, and he just wasn't doing well, and we were like, we're gonna give him through the weekend, and if we're gonna put him down like on Sunday. And I got up that morning and went to college, and I just said to him, hey buddy, if you need to go, just go. It's okay. I'm okay. And I came home, and he was in his little favorite spot on the balcony, curled up in the sun, and he had gone.
Aww.
And I was like, oh, I was so glad I said that before I went to college that day. And that he went and got in his little favorite. He was in the sun. He was so warm. It was just perfect. But I had to put my second cat, Mufasa, down, and it was terrible.
Yeah.
It was awful. So heartbreaking. And Priscilla.
Yeah, that was the worst.
Oh,
I went to bed for 3 days after Priscilla died.
You did?
It made me so sad.
You were probably exhausted from the worry.
The whole thing was pretty traumatic.
Yeah, it was terrible. I know. It was, there's a tissue if you need one. It was terrible. It was traumatic for everybody. I felt terrible for you because
I felt terrible for you guys. Like, there you're on vacation, and I'm like, I think you need to come kill your dog.
I know, right? It was awful. But I kept going, poor Ruth. Who wants to just show up for a dog sitting job and have a dog like collapse and go to the hospital?
That's the only one that's died on me. I mean, I've had some that have died, but not while I was there. But no, I mean, I just felt so bad because like trying to get her to the vet and then she just like went down in the parking lot. And I'm like, that's my last memory of her. I was like struggling to get her to the vet.
Bless her heart.
I felt bad for you guys. It's like racing back from the Grand Canyon just the whole time knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah, it was rough. It was really rough. The roughest, I think, is when I picked her up from the emergency vet. Because we had driven from the Grand Canyon. We got home at like 12:30 at night. And then Isla and I went to pick her up. And Bert and Georgia pulled the twin mattresses off the girls' two beds and put them in the living room so that we could all sleep with her. But when they rolled her out on a gurney, I almost lost my knees. I thought we should have come home. We should never have gone. But she wasn't sick when we left. We had no symptoms. She was fine.
Until like the third day, I think, the second or third day that I even noticed something was wrong.
So we had no idea, but I just felt terrible. And, you know, the vet had said on the phone, I think we should put her down now. And I said, I can't do that. I got to come home and I don't want her to die by herself. It was in COVID, wasn't it? Yes, it was in COVID. I don't want her to die by herself in a hospital, having been with you for hours. I can't do that. But then when I got there, I went, I made her suffer for hours so that, we could say goodbye.
They cleared her out, though, so she wasn't in that much pain.
She was better, but... Boy, that whole next day was just terrible. And I just felt so guilty. I felt so bad. I thought I just had her suffer so that we could say goodbye.
Well, I felt bad because she was out in the front yard and she didn't really want to come inside at all. So it's like I could have just let her stay there.
Yeah.
And, you know, she could have maybe died in peace, happy, whatever. But I'm like, I can't. Then we'd never know.
Yeah.
And then that would be horrible in a whole other way.
Yes.
You know, so it's like there's no good way for it to happen.
No.
But I was glad that you guys came because I'd have hated for the last thing for her to remember is me being like, Priscilla.
Oh, Priscilla Potamus.
Trying to tug her across the parking lot.
Well, we definitely got to say goodbye. It was very heartfelt and sweet and emotional and hard. And I think she really felt loved. So I think we sent her off with her really feeling surrounded by the people who loved her. I mean, all the campers came and said goodbye.
Oh, wow.
They all came in and gave her hugs and loves. And I mean, we tried to get the vet to come and euthanize her early in the day, and she just couldn't do it till like 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
And the bad part of that is she was really uncomfortable, but the good part was everybody got to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Everybody. We got to spend so much time with her that we were like, she needs to go. Yeah. Like, this is, she needs to go.
Yeah.
This is not good. Bless her heart.
She was a good one.
Yeah. Do you think you'll ever get another dog?
If I'm ever in a situation to, yeah. But I mean, it's hard now because it's like, that's the problem too. If I was ever to stop doing this, like I'm actually in love with all these dogs. You know? Like, how am I going to stop seeing my dogs?
I actually have 35 dogs.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It's a lot of responsibility. And then the whole thing, like if they get sick, you know, you have to have money to take care of an animal. So
yeah, totally.
It's kind of the same thing as like me ever getting an apartment again or starting over. It's like, how would I ever have enough money now to have my own? But I have so many.
You do have a lot. I know everybody that I've referred you to just loves you.
Oh.
And they love the way you care for their dogs. It's, everybody's been like, Ruth is the best. Oh. And the dog loves her. So cool that you do that. I genuinely do think it's really cool.
No, it is. I mean, I cannot complain about any of it. I created it myself and I love it. And, you know, I think if I hated it, I probably would have figured out something else to do, but I really do love it. And it's, like I said, I get to live in a lifestyle way above anything I could provide for myself. So there's really no downside to it at all.
I bet you have been to a lot of fancy houses.
Yours being the fanciest.
No, really?
Well, I mean, it's fancy in different ways, but, they've all been really nice, and big and, you know, more than I need or would get for myself.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how different people live, you know, but then you realize like everybody's house is kind of the same. Like I can find my way pretty much around anyone's kitchen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like how many places are there to put silverware?
Yeah.
You
right.
know, everybody's got it in the drawer.
Yes. Basically
there's
the
nothing
place.
That hard about it. So, you know, yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. I mean, like I said, whatever force my mom or whoever's leaking out for me, it's been pretty magical just to watch it sort of come to fruition, to be at the place I'm now.
Yeah.
That I'm pretty much booked like steadily.
That's awesome. I need to put my request in for spring break.
Yes, you do.
What is your favorite thing about living in someone else's house temporarily?
I think just having a nice house around me and having a kitchen if I want to use it and just, you know, all the amenities and just being in a nice place. You know, I grew up in a nice house and it's kind of like being home, you know, in a way.
That's cool.
Especially when it's people that I come back to over and over and over, you yeah. know. But I mean, the only weird thing is like, you know, I don't like to be there when the people come home.
Yeah.
Like that to me is weird. It's like one second, it's like my place.
Yeah.
And then the second they're back, I'm like, I'm just a guest. Like,
yeah.
I don't belong here.
Yeah. That would be an interesting transition. Yeah. So. I always wondered, I was like, you don't have to leave when we get home. You don't have to be gone. I always felt like, we made you feel like you had to be gone.
No, it's totally
in the
my
beginning.
Issue.
And then as I got to know you, I was like, oh, this is nothing to do with us. Yeah. Like, surely she feels comfortable enough with us. You know, we're not doing anything. I've had to figure it out.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I hope I'm not like rude and I'm not realizing.
No, I'm
realizing
just like, people want to come home, especially if you're coming back from a big vacation. Like I know I just want to go home and have my home. I don't want like some girl sitting there. Being like, like when you guys came home from Australia that early that time, I don't know if you even remember. You told me you were coming home at 8 at night and you came home at 8 in the morning.
Yes.
I think I was still in my pajamas.
Yes, like, hey. I do remember. Oops, my bad. And I was like, this is totally my fault.
But I'm like, oh my God, they've just come from Australia. Like they must be exhausted, just want to like sit in their house and get all this stuff together.
It was fine.
No, you've always been very welcoming.
It was fine.
But I'm like that with everybody. I just figure even the dog I sit for during the day, sometimes like I get out of there before her mom comes home at night.
Yeah.
It's just my thing.
Yeah. Just skedaddle.
I like to be alone, so I assume other people do.
I know you'd said that to me before. You would prefer to be alone.
A lot of the time. I mean, it does get lonely sometimes because like I sort of sometimes never have anybody to talk to.
Right.
But I do mostly. I mean, I'm an introvert by nature, but I also just, I like to be alone.
Yeah.
It's just always been that way.
Huh. I like to be alone too. I like my alone time, but I like people. I'm a highly social introvert.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, I'm like, everybody out.
Yeah. That's how I am. I can be social.
Yeah. Everybody out. Mama needs to be by herself. I love when Bert's home and then I love when he leaves.
Yeah.
First of all, I get to clean my house and it stays that way. And then second of all, I just have myself to take care of. I like that a lot too. I had another question. I was like, I have two more questions. One is, what do you like about other people's houses? And the other one was, if you had to stop doing this today, what would you do instead?
Why do I have to stop?
No, I'm just curious. I'm curious what
I told you once. I had a dream. I think I mentioned it to you. I had a dream that you were telling me, like, we only allow people to work with us for 5 years.
Yes,
and
do.
That
remember this dream.
So your 5 years is up. And so this is going to be like the last time. I was like, no, I don't know. It's hard because, again, I'm not set up to like do anything else right now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, hopefully when I do stop, it'll be because I have something else to do, like with my film or whatever. But
well, that's actually not what I mean.
I know. So, like if I had to choose something else to do.
Yes. And if you didn't worry about where you live or any of that stuff, just the purposeful, the doing, what else would you do?
No.
Not the practical piece. This is dream time fantasy.
I'd be a trophy wife.
No. Could be trophy wives together.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I like doing lots of different things, like probably something to do with production, but maybe more on like specials or, you know, benefits for causes or something like that. More than like reality TV.
yeah. kind of stuff. Is that what you were doing before? Was reality?
Well, more like home decor kind of reality and stuff. I did. I show ran my big redneck wedding for three seasons. That was my big. That was like the pinnacle of my career.
Big redneck wedding.
Yeah. But like I used to work on specials. I worked at MTV early on in my career and I worked on specials. And that's what I really like to do, like focus on one thing.
What do you mean by specials?
Like when this is going to date me, but when Rolling Stone magazine had their 25th anniversary, I worked on the 90-minute special about Rolling Stone magazine.
Okay, got it.
So it's like kind of a one-off a very distinct purpose.
Got it.
Versus working on a series where it's like the same stuff over and over and over again.
Right, right.
So I'd probably try and find my way back into production for something like that with people that I've worked with before and really like.
Right. And something that you enjoy doing, maybe. Yeah. Okay, that's cool.
I hadn't thought of that.
I just am curious. I always am curious with if your current job disappeared, didn't exist, wasn't on the planet, what would you do? I think that's a really interesting question because it just shows you a different side of that person.
Yeah. I'll have to think about that.
When I asked myself today what I would do, I think I might have been like some kind of like teacher or something.
Oh.
So I really enjoy, such a dork, I really enjoy my Girl Scout troop. So I'm like, oh, maybe I should have done that. I've been told my whole life you should have been a teacher. I was like, I'd never be a teacher. I don't like 9 to 5.
Yeah.
I don't like you have to be here at this time every day, every single day. But the act of teaching and watching these kids and Girl Scouts brings me so much fulfillment that I wonder if I wouldn't look into something like that. Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like I'd like to, there's other documentaries I'd like to do, not on suicide, you know, that I've always had ideas for and stuff. So
like what?
Well, one is called like Ancient Arts, and it's about like, you know, like in Guatemala, how they do all the hand weaving and stuff. Uh-huh. So looking at the teacher student relationship, because how it's passed down through generations and stuff, and just learning about those different kinds of arts. Like,
if
I could go back to or if I had stayed in college and really thought about what I wanted to do, I probably would have studied anthropology or something because I'm really interested in other cultures and travel. So I'd like to make films about like just stuff like that I'm interested in that people might not think about.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So we'll see.
When I travel, I always try to buy a handicraft, something that is handmade, that's cultural.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that means so much more than just some kind of kitschy, stupid.
Totally.
You know, Guatemala written on the side. I'd much rather have like sandals that someone made. Or a blanket that someone wove.
And there's a whole tradition behind it and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm fascinated about.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Well, that's very cool. Well, I can tell you this. I really appreciate having you.
Thank you.
You take a big load off my brain to leave town and know that my house and my animals and my kids sometimes are just handled. I don't have to think about it. It's
good.
And I don't ever feel bad asking you because I know that you bop from house to house. And I go, well, not that I'm helping her, but that it's a win-win.
Right.
Where
right.
I go, if she's available, then that really does work for her. And it makes me feel better. I always have this weird thing in my brain where I feel bad to ask somebody, like I used to have a mobile groomer and I would avoid asking him to come groom. It's his freaking job.
Right.
But something about it made me feel like I was imposing on him. Same with the car wash person who comes and washes our cars. Because in California, people get their car washed. They don't wash them themselves.
Right.
And, you know, same with anybody in that capacity. I always feel really bad asking for help.
Never me.
I know. And I don't because I feel like, well, this helps her too. It's clear. So she's helping me, but it helps her too. It's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though the money part of paying these people doesn't register the same. I don't know why.
No, but what you said makes me feel good because that's who I want to be. Like the person, like you don't have to worry about anything when you're gone.
No, I don't.
You know, I got it covered.
I don't worry about anything. And I know if something goes wrong, you'll call me.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to quote, figure it out. No. You're going to go, okay, Priscilla has collapsed in a parking lot. What do I do? And then we go, okay, here's what we do. And you do it. But it's really nice. It's really relieving because I've had, before I found you, I had dog sitters that stressed me out so much because I had this one dog sitter. I swear to God, you know, Friday to Sunday called me like 9 times. So the dog food. And I'm like, dude, I write it all down. It's all written down. Read the freaking thing. And if you can't figure out 2 scoops kibble, 1 scoop wet, you got problems, right. You know? So that was back when nobody had medication. You know, it was just super easy. And he called me 9 times in one weekend. And I was like, this was not relaxing. Now I'm worried that my dog's gonna run out the front door because you're such an idiot you can't even figure out how to feed him, you know what I mean?
Right
now I'm concerned about other issues,
right.
Which is whatever. Well,
I'm glad I can be that person for you.
Well, thank you, Ruth. Thank you, and thank you for all the help you give me.
You're welcome.
All the time. You're my backup lately for picking up Isla and for picking up the pieces of that I keep dropping. So thank you for being that.
Thank you for allowing me to be that.
I appreciate it.
So do I.
Thanks for being on the podcast today.
My pleasure.
Yay.